Hey everyone, Xander here. Several months ago, I asked James Jones to be on a connectivity with me and talk about the elements I don't like in the Zelda series. During the editing process, I thought I had lost some of the important audio files and gave up trying to get the episode back. Lo and behold, I have since recovered it and have been able to stitch things back together. I cringed a little bit while listening to my nervous self speak, but I want to thank James again for being willing to be on air with me in my first NWR segment that wasn't just words on a screen. With that said, I hope you enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to Connectivity. I'll be your host today, Xander Morningstar, and I also have a good friend with me, Mr. James Jones from RFN.
Hello.
Today, James and I are going to be talking about controversial things, right, James?
No.
We're going to be talking about Zelda and it as a series and why we like it and why I don't like it, or parts of it, I guess. You know, just growing up with it and the nostalgia that we have, and also the conversation I think there is to be have about the older games in comparison to Breath of the Wild. I'd also like to.
You're just getting right in there. Jeez.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Well, I guess we'll go ahead and start. I mean, if you want to just go into it, we totally can. I was just going to.
Why don't you give us a little context? So you emailed me about doing this segment, and we talked a little bit about where it comes from. Yep. Why don't you go ahead and let the audience know a little bit, just so they get an idea of what we're trying to do here?
So lately, I've just been thinking that you know, the Zelda series as a whole is great. It's very fun. A lot of people hold it very dear to them, and it's, you know, one of Nintendo's biggest IPs. Despite it not being one of their most sold ones in comparison to, you know, Mario Kart and Pokemon and even Animal Crossing and Splatoon. So I just wanted to talk about, like, why people like it and why I like it and why you like it. And you and I both come from different generations, me being in college still and you being, like, near retirement. So I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I'm totally kidding. I'm losing my train of thought because that was a terrible joke.
I'm 32. Come on.
I am 21, so
we're
close. We're close. You know, if I was 32 and someone said that to me, I'd hate them. So I take that back. I'm very sorry.
It's fine. Like, I've done a podcast for almost a decade. My ego is completely unable to be destroyed.
Oh gosh, that means I'm looking at my future self right now, which is terrifying.
You know, don't go down that road. That's dangerous.
All right, back on track here. I wanted
to talk about just for my benefit, so I can kind of help provide some context as necessary. What's your track record with the Zelda franchise?
Growing up, I only had. Played the original 2 on the NES and the demo of Ocarina of Time on one of the Smash games, so I never really left the Kokiri Forest. And outside of that, I did not start playing them until like my senior year of high school. So I've played almost every Zelda within the past 4 years. And I gotta say, like, there are definitely reasons I can understand why people like them so much. And also, there's a lot of things I feel like people don't talk about that I think are complete BS that don't work in a video game that I don't like.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw it out there. I know people probably will raise arms against that, but I don't get why this isn't a game, and I don't find the fun in it. I'm very, censoring myself or keeping it calm. But like with something like this, I just wanted to throw my voice out there and be kind of bold and try something new. So I figured we'd just talk about like different games that you've played in the series and then in comparison to what I've played.
All right, I'm going to ask, what are you talking about in particular?
Ocarina of Time.
What about Ocarina? Well, all right, let's pause.
The entire game, man. The entire
game. Let's pause before we say things we can't take back. All right, so you've played through all of the games now?
I have not played the Game Boy ones. I think Minish Cap is the only game I have beaten on from the Game Boy Advance. But the Oracle games and Link's Awakening, which I've heard are great, I have not played through. I think I played the beginning of Link's Awakening DX when it came out on the 3DS years ago. I think it was one of their first virtual console games.
Yeah, it was a launch game for the 3DS virtual console.
Yeah, it might have been.
And the 3DS eShop.
Was it in the Ambassador program?
No, there weren't any Game Boy games in the Ambassador program. The Ambassador program was Super Nintendo and NES games.
Really? Was it Super Nintendo? I thought the Super Nintendo games were for the new 3DS.
No, you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe it wasn't Super Nintendo. Maybe it was just NES games. I remember because a lot of those games never actually came officially to 3DS.
Right. They were exclusive.
But they also didn't work. Like they're like you could play them, but they wouldn't go into sleep mode, and they wouldn't use a bunch of features, and they were just kind of there.
Right. Weird.
The situation is the reason they never got released was because Nintendo never got them to work right.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say there was a Super Nintendo, but I could be wrong. Maybe there wasn't any. I have the Ambassador. I could just go get my 3DS, but eh.
Uh-huh.
It's better just to be wrong and not confirm it, and if people have to go look it up themselves, then yeah, know you're wrong, well, come in here and say you're wrong, and then everyone knows you were wrong.
I feel like the first 5 minutes of this podcast so far, I've already raised some angry fan mail.
They'll get mad later.
Okay, all right, cool.
So, I'm trying to think of how I could encapsulate my experience with the Zelda franchise. I have played the original Zelda, but I played it super late, and sure. So I have no tolerance for its like burn all the bushes bullshit.
Yeah, I agree.
So if you haven't played the original Zelda, which I'm actually going to guess a pretty significant portion of the listening base for connectivity probably hasn't, or if they maybe not to completion, like maybe they've poked at it.
Yeah,
but it's more relevant now in Breath of the Wild, in a post Breath of the Wild world, because Nintendo themselves have held it up for comparison. I think that comparison's a bit facile, but I get why they say it. So. Mm-hmm. The original's Legend of Zelda is open in the same way, in a sense, that Zelda is, although we don't, or that Breath of the Wild is, but only insofar as they just didn't know any better. It wasn't like they tapped into, like, we're going to create this open experience where you can go anywhere. It was because they basically made a big open sandbox game, and it was pretty easy to just wander around in it. But where that game gets made fun of, and justifiably, is that on many occasions, basically what your objective is, I don't know, do something. Eventually you'll find a secret somewhere and that'll get you in there. And burn all the bushes refers to one specific, I think it's a steps into a cave that is hidden under a bush. And it's just a bush. It's one of many bushes. And Link has the ability to burn bushes. And so you run that thing and eventually you find the one that lets you in. But it's not particularly well telegraphed. The game just
not the only game that does not telegraph things very well.
Other franchises though that did it are not as any not because those franchises are bad, just because that's the era those games are from.
Right.
In general, stuff was telegraphed better even back then. I mean, it's not Simon's Curse.
Mm-hmm.
That's a game that is just inscrutable. But
I'm very forgiving though of the NES games just because of how far back they are, whereas by the time the Super Nintendo and the N64 had come out, they had really evolved to the point of having a following, and they were pushing more for a story and giving a lot more a narrative to the gameplay itself rather than just find it, you know, or look for a certain item and burn the bush, stuff like that.
Well, and I would say that even in the NES era, there had been predecessors of games like it wasn't. This is gonna get an email. It wasn't like like the greatest of I'm sure I forgot best to word the phrase I want to say. There are games that came before Zelda that do things that Zelda does that. It adapts.
Are better?
I don't know if they're better. They're older.
Right.
like things that have evolved out that it maybe evolved itself, or that it included other attributes, or that things were done before. And it's, you know, it's not like they came in and invented a video game style whole cloth.
Mm-hmm.
It inherits some things from some predecessor titles, but it does, you know, those may not have been in the console space. They may have been on home computers, which at that time was a hyper fragmented market where, we talk about it on RFN occasionally, where like in the UK, there's like UK specific home computers with their own software that don't exist in other places. There's weird stuff like, you know, the Commodore and the Amstrad, and that, you know, these games may have existed but not been widely distributed or widely available because they were only on certain systems, which isn't in any way to denigrate what the original Zelda does. The original Zelda is a unique and well thought out and interesting game historically.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some bullshit. Like, there's some stuff in there that, like, it didn't need to be like this. You had to know better.
Right. And a lot of that carries over into the sequel, Link's Adventure. And that was, you know, that's part of the trilogy, I suppose, of the Nintendo sequels that are just kind of, well, we tried something new. We wanted to evolve it somehow.
That one, so what are the three you hold up there?
Like, as my top, like, Zelda okay, I see what you're saying. You know, there's Mario 2, there's the second Link game. The second Link game. Wow.
Adventures of Link.
Yeah, Adventures of Link. I was like, what is it called? Adventures of Link. And then what else am I thinking of? You know, Mario in itself is a very weird second game because there's like four versions of it.
Well, yeah, so Mario 2, what we got, Mario 2, is, of course, not a Mario game. I mean, it is, insofar as it is now a Mario game. But, of course, it was a licensed game based on a TV show in Japan. Like, some real weird high-wired nonsense.
And then when we got their Mario 2, they called it Lost Levels. And then when they got our Mario 2, it was USA. And then there was the Game Boy Advance remake. And it's just, so many versions of that game.
Yeah, Mario 2, aka Lost Levels, is an incredibly conservative evolution of the first Mario game. But it makes sense, because that game sold gangbusters.
Right.
And so them making a relatively simple evolution, which is really just, people played that game a lot, like a lot. Like the news, I don't remember, may not have been born when Mario came out, I don't think I was. I certainly wasn't when it came out in Japan. The news coverage was that the game, people were just playing it, not like there's news stories out there of people talking about, like, they bought this game for their kids, and then when their kids go to bed, they play it too. And the cut to like some woman with really 80s hair. I play this game for like 2 hours a night. It's great. people had gotten really good at Mario. And so Nintendo said, well, here comes some, you want Mario? Here's some harder Mario.
Yeah.
But, you know, Metroid doesn't really evolve that much because when it goes to its sequel,
I didn't want to say Metroid because it really is not that different.
No, I'm trying to think what other, because we talk about this, like Nintendo's second game is weird. I'm trying to think of what a good example one is.
Yeah, I am too. I'll think of it later and be like, oh yeah, this game.
Kirby.
Donkey Kong was the second one. Was that the math game?
Oh no, Donkey Kong is weird. But so even the second Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Math is like the fifth or some bullshit, but like Donkey Kong Jr. is different. It's conceptually similar, but it is different because of how you control it, and what you do with it, and how you go. Because I mean, you're playing as the Donkey Kong Jr., the titular character. But they do. And they're not alone in this. A lot of you know, Simon's Quest does it. We talked about them. A lot of games in that era, they made a game, and the game sold well, and so they decide to make a second game, which is what you do. And they're still learning how to design video games, and so they say, okay, well, what we did last time was really cool. Are people going to want to do it again? maybe not. So let's go and invent a new thing to do this time. How do we change this game up? How do we do something different this time? And, you know, we've climbed the mountain on the first game we made, so can we make a different game now? Can we build something unique? And there is value in thinking that way, because it forces you to create new ideas and evolve what those games would become. Like if trying to think of a good example. Simon's Quest doesn't happen, and God damn it, I wish Simon's Quest didn't happen, because it's terrible. But if it didn't happen, it would have caused a for lack of a better word, a scar on that franchise. Like, that franchise exists to the benefit of itself because of the work that was done in that game, even though that game itself is god-awful. It just is. Like, it's there, people will defend that game, but it's a bad game. But again, they didn't know what they were making yet. So I'm not mad at them about it, but they learned a bunch of lessons from making that god-awful game, because now they know, oh, hey, if you do stupid stuff like this, it's going to be terrible and people aren't going to like it.
Which is weird, because there's a lot of things I find in the Zelda series that are stupid that I think a lot of people are, like, very comfortable with.
Such as?
I don't know. The way they gate things in the Zelda games, like in A Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time, like the weird pseudo backtracking. Like, you leave Kokiri Forest, and then you do the stealth mission to get into Hyrule Castle. You talk to Zelda, and she's like, okay, we have, like, she kind of lays out the plan.
Right.
And then you immediately have to go back to Kokiri Forest, even though you just had a heartfelt goodbye with Saria, just so you can learn her song. Like, there's things like that. And then, you know, with getting into Jabu Jabu's belly, you have to put the fish in front of him to make sure that he opens up his mouth so you can get in. And I don't know where in the game you're supposed to find that. And I have found that after having played so many of the Zelda games in a fairly short period of time, it's almost more fun to have a walkthrough with you. Maybe not for the dungeons, but just for the in-between experiences. Because then you know what you're supposed to do, and it's less, there's a lot less confusion. I feel like I'm going on a more brisk experience, and I feel like I'm filling in that void of what a lot of people that grew up with these games just call, oh, that's playground talk. Like, you have to talk to your friends to figure that out, which I experienced when playing Breath of the Wild fresh with everyone else. So that's part of the weird nostalgia that I don't have for the older Zelda games that a lot of people do. Like, when people talk about the greatest games of all time, Ocarina of Time and A Link to the Past are immediately thrown up there. And I don't ever agree with that, because both of the experiences I've had with those were just frustrating. I got locked out of a dungeon two or three times in A Link to the Past because there's a dungeon, I think it's the Dark Cave dungeon, or the, not the Thieves Hideout, but the very first one you do in the Dark World. There aren't enough keys or something like that they prevent you from being able to get through the dungeon, and you have to basically start the entire game over. And that happened twice with me. And then on the third playthrough, I got all the way to Ganon, and the game glitched out, and I wasn't able to defeat him. He was basically just invincible because my sword would go through him. And that really pulled my experience down, because I don't understand why people don't find these kind of flaws, like, necessary to bring up in the greatest games of all time conversation.
How are you playing it?
I was playing that on the 3DS, and I do think that playing it on a handheld might have been a hindrance to what was originally designed to be a console game.
I was actually wondering, because I have never experienced, I'm aware of the keys issue that you can run into. I've never experienced the glitch where the game just, like, Ganon freaks out.
It was this weird, I don't remember if I was swinging my sword or what, but it had something to do with, you know how he, like, makes it really dark?
Yeah.
And you have to, like, light torches? I think this has been, it's been a few years, so I'm trying to recall how it played out, but I was lighting the torches, and I think I lit one too soon, and maybe it was when he started to make the screen blackout, and it was just like this state of he's still moving and Link is still doing his animation, but like you can tell the game is like locked, like it's not the world is not acting as it's supposed to be, like the fire was not moving and like the screen was not fully black, so I wasn't able to kill him, and I had to restart the whole thing, and I don't know, it was just very frustrating. So maybe it's not that bad of a game and I just have bad luck, but I remember there was one part where you're like trying to get to one other half of the dark world, and I recall there's a big like ravine that kind of separates the dark world into almost islands, and to get to the other side you have to use like the hook shot or whatever to hook onto a random skull that's just sitting in the overworld so you can pass the ravine. But it's like a pixel, not a pixel, but it's like one tile big in comparison to the whole world. And maybe there's a better way to get around, but after having like tried to figure this out for a while and then finally just being able to, in my eyes, BS it and get through to the other side by using the hookshot, that didn't feel like a great game design to me, because while you're supposed to be exploring and finding secrets, that one single path to get to the other side doesn't feel like it's representative of what the game is supposed to be going for. So yeah, that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg of the beef I have with A Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time. And I hope that the words I've used are providing some brevity and clarity. And I don't want to like be disrespectful to anyone who does, and I'm sure a lot of people do, really like those games, because you know I'm really glad that they do. I just those are the experiences I've had with them. And again, I think walkthroughs for me are more fun with them.
And that's fine. Like I never really ran into those kinds of issues with those games in particular. I did run into something on Link to the Past. I just can't remember what it was because it's been so long. Those games work really, really, really well because mechanically what they're doing is super refined. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know how much you follow the Zelda scene, but there's an entire community based around the idea of the Zelda randomizer, mm-hmm. which is, it takes a link to, usually it's Link to the Past. In fact, as far as I know, it's always Link to the Past. But they take Link to the Past and they randomly generate where all the items are in the game.
Oh boy.
And you know, you talked about how the Zelda series manages progression, and one of the things it does is it uses items to gate where you can and cannot go. And so this is a situation where the game uses items to keep you from accessing portions of the world you're not supposed to be in yet. Well, if the item locations are randomized, you have to figure out where that item is, where you get your first set of items based on, you know, the normal items that Link gets where he normally starts the game, but it's not those items. It's something else. And so
this is like a mod of some sort.
Yeah. It's a mod that people have made for, Link to the Past.
Is it purely random, or is it random in the sense that it places them in spots that are like still like the game is still beatable?
It is still beatable. So the game uses seeds. So like if you wanted to let someone else play the same instance of the game world, you would share the seed, which is like a number.
Okay.
And in theory, the randomizer removes all scenarios that can't be beaten. So like there's no way to progress without doing it. I'm not sure how
there's no instances of like getting locked out because you don't have an item and you can't get to it.
Yeah, to my knowledge, that is the case.
Okay.
But yeah, like, so this is a bit of an aside, but like that works in that game in no small part because that game is in general, well made. But obviously that doesn't mean you have to like the game.
Right.
There are games that I believe are tremendously well made that I utterly despise, and that's fine. Like I think Metroid Prime is well made. I don't like it.
Sure.
Metroid Prime 2 is not well made. I don't like it. And that is a controversial opinion, but my opinion is formed on the idea that it's just not what it does, like what its ideas are hampered by a design decision. And this might be kind of where you're at. For me, I look at that game, it's a game about exploring and wandering around and finding the right path, but then they put in a thing that hurts you as you walk around in the dark world. And to me, I look at that and go like, well, that's dumb. Why would you do that?
Why would you, when you die and you have to start over, and the Zelda games are fairly forgiving about where they put you in placement of where you died, so that's always appreciated. But you always have like half hearts or a quarter hearts, and you're already beeping, and then you need arrows to go beat the bad guy, but there's only a certain number of pots nearby, and all of them have rupees or hearts, but they don't have arrows. They've got bombs and Deku seeds, but they don't have arrows. So you got to backtrack all the way out and go buy some, or you don't have enough rupees. So you have to, I don't know, that whole cycle has been not something that has been removed. It's been long-lasting through most of the games that I've played. And so I don't feel like that is ever brought up in comparison to like people just talking about how great these games are. The most go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, I think a lot of that is, and you kind of touched on it, is that they just sort of know, like that the people just kind of go like, yeah, that's just part of what this game does. Mm-hmm. And that's not an excuse. It's just they're used to it. And so as a consequence, it doesn't really bother them as much.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely had my experiences with the Zelda game where I got turfed by the enemy, and then I'm like, shit, I don't have the thing I need. I have to go re-up. But it doesn't like immediately piss me off, but just because I'm used to it. The game is pretty good about boss fountaining right outside of a boss's room. But in that area that it starts you in as when you come out after dying, less so.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't necessarily know that you died. I mean, does it know that you died fighting the boss? Kinda. But it doesn't adjust the contents of that room accordingly. Whereas the boss fountains are usually tuned specifically to that room, to that boss. So if you're going to go fight a boss that needs a billion arrows, the boss fountain is going to be full of arrows. And then the boss instance itself is also going to have arrows in. But hearts and stuff, because you have to get through the stage without dying. But what it does do is, you've played a lot of Zelda games at this point. Describe that series warp system, because it's pretty consistent, actually.
As far like just getting around.
Yeah, like how did they implement fast travel in those games? Because I thought as a kid this was really cool.
A lot of them are just play a song and go somewhere.
Yeah, but inside the dungeon there's another warp. Because once you kill the mini-boss, you can jump straight there. And usually the mini-boss is pretty near the boss door. Or the boss is set up in such a way that it's right near the front of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of times boss will be right in the front, so you can walk right past it.
It's not always bosses, though. Sometimes there are puzzles. In those dungeons I hate the most are the ones that are like one big room but have multiple floors. There's one in the Wind Waker towards the end. I think it's either the Earth one or the Wind one. That is, it's just a big room, and then there's like different branching doors coming out of that big room, but they don't have enough items for you to solve the puzzle in the room. You have to keep backtracking different areas to get the item you need, and then you have to like climb to the bottom to turn on the fan so you can fly up. And then that game, that's probably the one people complain about the most as far as like a flaw in a Zelda game. And that's just because of the Triforce Hunt, because that's a huge thing people don't like. Whereas, like, when I played that, I mean, I agree, it was not the most fun experience, but I thought it was less messed up than, like, having to continuously backtrack to get items or not having the, you know, a lot of those things that you said were people were taking for granted. For that one, I was like, well, at least it's a different experience. It's not going to be repeated because it's specific to this game. Don't know. It's just this weird thing I've just been thinking about. I don't know. It bothers me when people just immediately are all in agreement that these are like the best of the gaming world has to offer. Like Ocean Horde, I played that recently, and that's a blatant Wind Waker ripoff. But like, I think it does things better. Like, it doesn't have that those things that people take for granted.
I'm not touching now? This. I'm staying far away from that statement.
All right.
So, I mean, but again, this is.
I appreciate that.
To use the relatively crass phrase, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has them, and somebody thinks they stink.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and that's not a criticism of you. I'm just saying, like, don't people like what they like? And
yeah.
I wouldn't sweat too much. You know, if you don't get Zelda. That's a dumb phrase that I'm saying.
There are a few I love. There are a few I have a list. All right.
So let's attack that question then. Which are the ones that you've loved?
I have played Minish Cap twice, the A Link Between Worlds on the 3DS three times, in the Hero mode as well. Breath of the Wild I really liked, and there was one other.
So I'm gonna guess based on the ones that you named. You probably, well, no. I'm trying to think which one would be like the ones that you've just name dropped.
There was another one. I guess not. I played the DS ones in middle school and thought they were really good. I haven't played them in years, though, so.
Did maybe. You like them?
As a kid, I liked them, yeah. I know people don't like them, but I remember when I played them thinking they were really cool.
Yeah, I actually really like those games, personally.
Mm-hmm. I remember liking to be able to like play a flute or like close your DS to put a stamp on something or
yeah, like it's dumb, but mm-hmm. it's fun. Like
all the gimmicky stuff I thought was cool as a kid.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I would say that I'll give a little context as to what my love for this franchise is. And there are games in this franchise I don't much care for.
Okay. Cool. I'm glad that I'm not the only one that's going to be hated.
No, everyone, everyone in even their favorite franchise has games they don't like or don't like as much. Mm-hmm. So I like the Zelda games a whole lot. Like it's depending on when you ask me, I may come back and say it's my favorite Nintendo franchise, but it can be amorphous.
Sure.
Like
I'm gonna say, like I enjoyed playing them, you know.
Sure,
like,
I think
that, like Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, even Ocarina of Time. Like when I get through them, I'm like, yeah, that was a good game. I don't agree that it's worthy of what the praise people give it, but that's fine. That's just you know my opinion. Those are the experiences that I'm sharing. I don't have really any desire to replay them. Maybe in like when I'm your age, I guess, like a decade later, I suppose. But even you said like you have not played these in a while.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, it like, depends.
Those
on
are the games I have played, like Minish Cap and A Link Between Worlds and Breath of the Wild. I think those are the games I've just really enjoyed playing again.
I mean, some of that's how I consume games, though. Like, I, you know, mm-hmm. when I go back and replay a game, it's kind of a thing. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
There's a handful of games I've played more than twice. It's a pretty short list, and it's not because I have some fine. Like refined taste about how many times I can
play. Yeah, I don't either. I'm just.
It's just a matter of. It's just not something I do that much. Mm-hmm. Like I like playing some games a lot, but mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that I do it.
Right.
One thing that I'll kind of give some context is to like the games that I've played that just to keep us moving that
sure
in that franchise get to me. So I respect the hell out of Skyward Sword in some ways.
Likewise.
Because what they tried to do with that control is surreal. And it was destined to be disliked. And mm-hmm. I don't say that as a joke. I don't say that to like, man, you idiots. I mean that. Like, they knew going in that this was going to be controversial.
Right.
And I respect the hell out of them for trying it.
Especially with how late that game came out, there was no surprise that people were against motion controls by that point.
But I actually don't mind the controls of that game.
I don't either, except I think when I played it, the ending where I was fighting the final boss, and you know that's a sword fight. I know it's very easy. I've watched people get through it pretty quickly. I recall my experience being, this is such a cool, awesome moment. I'm struggling to get behind these controls, even though for the majority of this game, I've been fine with them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's maybe more less the controls and more the game didn't necessarily prepare you for that moment.
Right.
What I don't like about that game is the same thing that I don't like about Twilight Princess. So I have two things about Twilight Princess I don't particularly care for. And one is that it's just like it went too hard into the image it was trying to put off. Like I thought it leaned in too much to the whole like
the lore.
The dark and gritty stuff.
Oh, okay.
There's the infamous Blades Will Bleed trailer. Yes. Which is just stupid. Just absolutely unfathomably dumb. And as a kid, when that trailer came out, I don't remember how old I was, but as a kid, I'd have been in high school. That trailer may have had more impact on me now than now when I watch it, and I just fucking laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's so bad. Like, I edited an episode of RFN, and Blades Will Bleed was like a chapter title. And it wasn't relevant at all. It just amused me.
Mm-hmm.
But what bothers me about both those games is the teardrop hunt, or the whatever they call it, and
the weird like chase the bug thing or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in Twilight Princess, you're in wolf form, which I didn't much care for anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's doubly not enjoyable. But the game itself, I really like. I really like Skyward Sword. I like Twilight Princess less. One thing I think you'll find as you kind of get more into the culture around these games is that like people will say like, "Man, Twilight Princess sure was a bad game." Like they'll come around on it and they'll be like, they'll go all the way over to the point where now they've gone too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
Like, we did a retroactive with Twilight Princess a couple years ago, and we talked about it, and it's not a bad game. Like, it just isn't. Like, there's no metric through which, if that is a bad game, your scale is all fucked up. But I don't think it's a great game. Like, I think it's got issues. I think it's got significant issues.
Yeah, I know a lot of people talk about the dungeons in that game, and I remember thinking that they were really neat. A lot of these type of dungeons, though, that were in Twilight Princess and even in The Wind Waker, they ask you to do things that they've never really shown you how to do before, and you're just required to do them in order to progress. Like in Wind Waker, there's a part where you have to use your grappling hook to swing. You know, you can swing across ledges. That's taught you. That is taught to you. Mm-hmm. But they don't tell you you can stop swinging and then climb up the rope to get on top of a ledge. Like, at no point did I ever think to do that, and is it ever taught, because you only know to swing. Or in Twilight Princess, in the mansion dungeon, there's like a cannonball thing that they don't really teach you how to do. It's just kind of sitting there, and then you're expected to be able to know how to use it and solve the puzzle. And I don't know, I can't get behind those.
See, and I actually like that. I liked the one, I know exactly what you're talking about, in the abandoned mansion, because yep. Link has the I can't remember what they call the steel ball that he has on the chain.
Yes, yes.
And you can use it to effectively launch yourself, because Link's still holding on to that chain when you drop it in the cannon. Now, they had shown you shooting cannonballs earlier, right, and they had shown Link carrying the steel ball the exact same way he carried the cannonballs.
Sure.
And so that's their visual hint to you that you can do this.
Yeah. I guess I just didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, and believe me, there have been times in a Zelda game where like there's a visual hint I'm just missing, and it's like, what the fuck do you want me to do? And I can tell you exactly one. Mm-hmm. Ocarina of Time. I'm playing it about 7 months after it came out, because I got an N64 late. It was the third game I got for the N64. Mm-hmm. And there is a section in the forest dungeon. Is it the forest dungeon? The second forest dungeon. Not the first one. So it's after you get the bow, which you get in the forest temple. There's a pillar across a lake or across a river, and you have to walk across. You have to shoot the bombs at the base of the pillar.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not for the life of me figure out what to do there because I just didn't pick up on the visual cue of the bombs. I would say that's a situation, or maybe they could be more explicit about it. But I went and played that game like a year and a half later, and I had forgotten that I got stuck there. And I just immediately saw it and went, oh yeah, bombs, shoot. And and then I, once it fell down, I went, oh yeah, that really screwed with me last time I played this game, didn't it? So some of it's just like how much did you pick up? And it's not even a matter of like, oh, you just miss things. You're blind. It's just a question of like, did your eyes hit the right thing? Did you try the right thing? Is it there? Mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild, to kind of go all the way around, does this too, but it doesn't do it in a way that's for gating progress because that game's puzzles aren't really progress gates.
Right. They built a system and then built the dungeons around that rather than just building the dungeons and asking you to learn things in them, which is why, and I know a lot of people don't really care for the Breath of the Wild dungeons, I thought they were awesome. I wish that they had the environments. I wish that they looked a little different and that they had better themes because they were very much the same. But the way they designed them, I thought was very well done, if not just a little short.
See, I found them to be utter chores. It's just like, I need to burn through this shit because I'm not trying things new. I'm not learning new things. I'm not evolving. I had the same complaint about... I'm blanking on the 3DS one.
A Link Between Worlds?
Yeah. I went on the show and just trashed A Link Between Worlds. Because I think that game is actually not a good Zelda game.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying it's not a good game.
Sure.
I'm saying it's not a good Zelda game.
Yeah, whereas I really liked that one. So it's like I don't know. It's almost as if like just different tastes or the way that they're designed.
Because my complaint with that game is it doesn't require you to continue to evolve your knowledge.
Sure.
Because it's you need to figure out how to use this item in this dungeon, and then you can forget everything you learned about it and move on with your life. Which, to me, it was always like, hey, look, we can combine things and do stuff with them. That's really cool. The double hookshot in Twilight Princess. You know, I've been using hookshots now forever. Because they show up in the 2D games. They show up in Ocarina. Using a hookshot in 3D was really cool. Like, oh shit, that's a neat thing that they just had me do. The double hookshots, like, my mind exploded. Because I played that game when it came out. So I didn't know it was there. I didn't know about double hookshots. I get there, and it's like, oh, I can hookshot twice now? That's awesome. Yeah. And then it was like learning, okay, what did I do with the hookshot before? When you get the grappling hook in Wind Waker. Like, all the stuff you can do with it beyond the obvious, like, that was really fun to me. Like, okay, what can I do with this grappling hook now that I have it?
Right.
I
almost wonder if that's, like, the difference, because I said earlier I didn't really care for A Link to the Past, but the remake of it, A Link Between Worlds, is one I really did like. I played it 3 times.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, though, that the dungeons, like, they were... I don't want to say samey, but they relied so much on puzzles that you had already seen before. They didn't really progress. And Breath of the Wild did do that. And so, like, you could make the argument that, like, Xander, you only like it because you immediately know what to do. But, like, even in the Breath of the Wild DLC dungeon, there's parts where you have to use your magnet to move metal blocks into the side of the wall, which is actually a gear, which then rotates and opens up. So, like, I thought that was... While a simple puzzle, it's still a little more inventive than rotate the camera and shoot the crystal that's hanging in the side of the wall you can't see.
It's the best designed of the dungeons in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not necessarily an incredibly strong statement. It's more of a condemnation of the rest of them.
Yeah, I thought the camel was kind of tricky, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was burning through them in about 20 minutes a piece, just like just click, okay. click, running through those things. But I like, you know, and again, this is all expectations and what you enjoy. I like that you talked about the interstitial phase between dungeons and Zelda games, not knowing what to do. To me, that's some of my favorite parts of the Zelda game. It's like, okay, I've cleared out a dungeon. Something has changed somewhere. Things are different now. Let's go explore around and see if I can figure out what to do. they might tell you, hey, you need to go over here, but they're usually very rarely explicit about, like, okay, now go to this place and talk to this guy. You're gonna need to do this, 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 and this. It's usually more general. Like, okay,
sure.
Now that you're here, what are you gonna do? Like, so I enjoy that. I enjoy that, like, get lost, figure it out, wander around thing. And that's to Breath of the Wild, like, that to me, I like the puzzle shrines because they're really good. They're pretty good puzzles. They're kind of like the best ideas that come out of normal Zelda puzzles.
Mm-hmm. It's almost just the best of dungeons rather than fully fledged ones.
Yeah, like they have the ability to do stuff that they didn't before. Right. That because they're not trying to build a whole dungeon. Right. They're just building one puzzle. They don't have to. I mean, you made a comment about like the shoot the crystal that you can't see thing. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That does show up in a lot of Zelda games, but they don't have to put that in there because they only had to design two puzzles. Because the shrines usually have two puzzles. There's one puzzle to solve the shrine, and there's one puzzle to get the bonus chest that's also in the shrine.
I think the shrines, though, they do. I mean, while they are micro dungeons, they do have at least some of them. I know not all of them. Not all shrines are equal. They do have a bit of progression because they ask you to, like, they'll give you the hint and then they'll give you like a very, very brief tutorial to get you from like the starting gate to like the next platform, whether it be like, I think one of the early ones is Ride the Wind, where you have to use your parasail to jump from a higher place to using the wind to get to another platform. But then they build off of that. One of my favorites is actually that one on the plateau where you learn how to use the hammer and then stasis to hit that ball, because no matter how hard you try, you cannot move the ball that's on the platform. You have to get around it somehow, but you can't, so you have to use stasis on it and then hit it with your hammer, and then it builds up the kinetic energy, and then when it's released it flies off. But then as soon as you do that, the micro dungeon's over. So I get what you're saying, that like they do need to progress that a little more, but almost it you have to wonder, like, is that even possible? Like, okay, you solved it. Now what? Is it just because they're so bite-sized that you can't do anything else with it? I found, though, that a lot of the traditional dungeons in my playthroughs, I would always, because like you, I do like getting lost and being like, wow, it's a big puzzle here in front of me. It's time for me to solve it. You know, like, all my focus is on that. And that is an appealing thing to me. But where I get frustrated is I always get really close to being able to figure it out. And I have to give up because I just don't know what they're asking me. I'm missing that visual cue. And then when I look it up, I'm like, oh, I just had to stop swinging so I could climb the rope. I couldn't. All right. I guess that's fine. Right. So that's just some of my frustration I have with it. And I get it. Maybe it's just because it's dated. I told you earlier, I grew up much more of a Mario fan. And so I'm able to handle the BS that Mario pulls that I'm just okay with. Whereas I have a very close friend who never played any Nintendo games growing up, and so I've been sharing older games with him. And so we played Mario 64, and he beat the whole thing, but it was a struggle for him just because of how archaic it was. And then he wanted to play Ocarina of Time next, and he was commenting on the story, and he thought it was very dumb. But he ended up dropping out at the Forest Temple, and not because of the puzzles, but because of the combat. He just didn't like how you had to continuously wait for the Stalfos to move so you let their guard down so that way you could hit them. And then it was the room where you have to face two of them, and if you beat one, it like turns into a pile of bones, and then it'll like rebuild itself if you don't beat the second one in time. He spent like an hour trying to get past that, and at that point he's just like, you know what, this is not a fun game for me anymore. I don't really understand the hype that people have before it. And that's where I really started to like think about like my experiences that I've had with these games. And in a way, there's a weird comparison to be made there, because while I grew up with like Mario 64, and I know the things that people playing it now would see as BS, I still find it fun. Whereas because I didn't play Ocarina of Time growing up, I have to use a walkthrough now to get that enjoyment that other people do have with it. So I think that's just what I'm missing there. I wish that there was a way to like be able to judge a game based on just the merits of not knowing what it is. I mean, if that makes any sense at all.
I can see that. I actually don't have too much of an issue sort of contextualizing the game as it was released at that moment. Because I know what I'm looking at. You know, I don't want to play... I don't want to play the original Legend of Zelda game. I just don't. Like, I don't like that game. I respect what it is. I respect that they made it and that it was a really cool thing when they made it at the time. I just don't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. That's not to call it bad. I would not do that. That would be unfair.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also not to call it not bad, because there's some things in there that probably shouldn't have been the way they were. And
sure.
I think they know that. Like, they are quite, they haven't explicitly said, oh, well, obviously we should have, you know, we should have made this game differently. Look how bad it is. They just stopped doing those things that weren't good. And mm-hmm. and I think that's important sometimes to look at them and go like, oh, they just stopped doing that stuff. I'm curious what your thoughts on based on what we've got, I'm curious what your thoughts on Majora's Mask were, because we talked a little about this a bit with Mario 2, the real Mario 2. That game sold a ton of copies, people were playing it, and so Nintendo basically said, well, you guys like Mario, here's more Mario. This one's harder. Majora's Mask is kind of a neat little thing, because they basically said, you guys like Majora's Mask, or you guys like Zelda Ocarina of Time, here you go. Here's more of that, and we've stepped the game up a little bit.
All right, so the first time I played that was around the same time I was playing the Ocarina of Time demo, and when I played that, I was just like, I can't beat this. This is too hard for me. So I gave up on it as a kid. I think the first thing you have to do is collect like the 10 stray fairies so you can turn it into Link again. I couldn't do that. So I gave up on it. And then I played it again when it was released for the 3DS. And that was really my first time playing through it. And that's kind of a hard... that's part of the reason why I've been avoiding talking about that, because... I guess not avoiding, I just haven't really contributed that to the conversation, because effectively that it's kind of a different game than what the N64 one is, just because they changed a lot of it in comparison to what the old one was, like some of the how the bosses work and the dungeon layout. But regardless, I think I enjoyed that one more than Ocarina of Time, just because the premise was a little different. But it did, because it was built on the same engine, they reused a lot of the things I didn't like about it, like some of the enemies that, like the Stalfos, you know, and then also it still had some of the same, like, okay, you need more arrows, but you don't have enough of them, so you have to go back, and, you know, you don't have enough rupees, but you have to go all the way back to Clock Town to, I guess you can warp, but you have to go to the bank to get some out, or a lot of stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of running around Termina Field just trying to find, like, enough magic for your Goron so he can, like, get over the crevice to the snowy area. It's an interesting premise because there are so many things that are the same as Ocarina, but because it is different in regards to, like, what the objective is and having that time mechanic, I thought I was, like, more attracted to that because it was a... It's as if the game itself was a dungeon. It was one big puzzle trying to get things done, almost like a management game. I don't really have a desire to play it again just because when I got done with it, I was like, that was really cool. It was very different. I don't think I want to do it again. And I played it in its entirety. I got the Fierce Deity mask. But I'll say, like, a lot of those masks, I was like, I don't know how to get this. I guess I'm going to have to turn to a walkthrough. And, like... When I say that out loud, there's a bit of a shame that just kind of comes to me because, like, I don't want to use a walkthrough. I know there's a lot of people that probably didn't need to use walkthroughs. But, like, there comes a point where I'm playing it and I'm like, I don't know what to do. This isn't fun for me anymore. I just want to get to the next thing. I guess I'm just going to have to turn to the internet. But, like, the internet was not around as much as when that game came out. So,
What? No. Absolutely. Absolutely not. The internet was very much around and very much something I was using on a daily basis when that game came out.
All right. Okay.
2000. Yeah. Oh, good God. Yeah. I had a computer in my bedroom at that point.
All right. Well, I was 3 years old. Okay. And so I did not have one.
But like,
so forgive me for
the internet was
aging.
Around.
Okay, sure, but I don't know if people. I guess it's hard for me to even comment on this, just because I wasn't there.
GameFAQs was very much a thing at that point.
It was okay.
Yeah.
I retract what I said.
Believe me, there were some games that I had to GameFAQs.
So then, what you're saying is the people that played this game years ago, they did the same thing I'm doing.
Yeah.
Now, right.
Sure.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I guarantee you, somebody somewhere listening to the show, right when they played Ocarina of Time for the first time. And maybe not Ocarina of Time. That one may be... It's not that the internet wasn't around then. but the culture of GameFAQs probably evolved some since Ocarina of Time came out between the two games. But people, you know, had these games. They Googled stuff. I mean, it wasn't as easy to find the answer to your question. No, you're right about that. And like, I remember distinctly having to like at one point look up something, and I looked at I was looking at the strategy guide, which was for sale, and that was why strategy guides were sealed, so you couldn't just do that. But somebody, some unscrupulous child, had unsealed the strategy guide, and far be it from me to turn down that person's efforts to show the man that they're not scared of looking up data on this game.
I know, but then it turns into like the conversation of like, should games just be built around strategy guides? I'm not looking at any specific Castlevania games, but
I don't think it was though. Like, I think, you know, in that I'm trying to think of. In Ocarina of Time, there is one. There's one thing I had to look up. In Majora's Mask, I actually, for whatever reason, I got Majora's Mask for my birthday.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe it was Christmas. I can't remember. And for whatever reason, the relative who bought it for me got the strategy guide, because I think they got snookered by the person selling it.
Yeah.
And I didn't need it. Like, whatever. I don't need the strategy guide for this game. But, like... To some degree, yeah, they wrote that strategy guide knowing that game had a lot of secrets in it and that it would be easy to miss some things. Mm-hmm. That game actually, in a weird way, has a built-in strategy guide, the Bomber's Notebook, which is designed to serve, in many ways, the purpose of a strategy guide. It is there to help you keep track of shit. And I thought the Bomber's Notebook was, at the time, I thought the Bomber's Notebook was amazing. Because, like, oh, I don't have to track anything. It's all done for me. That's great. I love this. And so a lot of those quests, the mask quests, would have never been solved by me without the Bomber's Notebook. I just would not have been able to do it. Mm-hmm. And, like, that made a big difference from where I was sitting. Like, okay. This game is now something that can be solved by me as a person versus something where I'm going to be stuck forever trying to make this game work the way I want it to. But there's definitely a certain amount of this game where it's just like, do I like what I'm doing? Do I like how I'm getting through it? I don't know that I've had a Zelda game that just infuriated me with anything like that. But to your point, there are absolutely games that were built, for lack of a better word, around, like, I'm okay with this being super hard, even though maybe it was excessive. Maybe it was definitely excessive. There are games out there where the people who made the game, like, knew the strategy guide was a thing and were like, if you can't figure it out, you'll figure it out.
Well, I mean, there's some truth to that. As a kid, and I'm talking like first grade, I played Super Mario 64 a lot. It was like really the only big N64 game I owned, and we had a bunch of smaller things, but that was the one. And those environments, some of them I just didn't know what to do, but I would try everything, and I mean everything. In Wump's Fortress, the star that was Break the Wall, you know, you have to get in the cannon and shoot that one wall. Well, as a kid playing it, and I was like, what are they talking about? Break the wall. Like, do you have to punch everything? So I punched every wall, you know, I would climb to the top of the tower, and there's like one of those just generic little boxes that Mario can pick up. I would throw that at things. Like, I tried everything. And I remember there's one wall that you can break and get like a secret one up at the very top of the level.
Yep.
And thought that was it. And I'm like, okay, where's the star? You know, like what am I supposed to do? And it just by sheer luck, I got in that cannon and hit the wall that was supposed to be broken. But I mean, I don't have a frame of reference, but I know it had to have been hours, maybe days of me just experimenting on that one thing. And I think that I have a lot more tolerance for that as a kid, but just not as an adult. And I don't think that concept has gone away in some of these Zelda titles.
So I'll spoil something for you about that one. That's just part of getting older. Like that's just going to happen. Like there's stuff from some of my favorite games as a kid. I say kid, like different ages, but younger that I simply will not fucking tolerate now.
Yeah.
And I can give you a great example. And that example is Tales of Symphonia. Tales of Symphonia is a great game. That game can go fuck itself. Because there is some bullshit in that game that is intense. Like, just a tremendous disrespect for your time.
Uh-huh.
And
I guess I would say the same thing about all of these Zelda games that I'm talking about. Like, I respect them, I like them, but I don't want to play them ever again because they don't respect my time, you know? Whereas Breath of the Wild is such a different experience, I'm much more inclined to play that again. And same with A Link Between Worlds. Like, there's so much less of that, yeah, I'll play that again. While the dungeons might not be as adequate as the other ones, at least, like, there's not that BS stuff.
Breath of the Wild's thing is that it isn't trying to respect your time. And there's no weird concept that it's, like, it's basically saying, just go do what you want to do. And to some degree, that can be liberating if you're like, God, I don't know what to do. Well, I'll just go do something else. Whereas the other Zelda games most of them, have a fairly fixed progression. And being stuck can be one of the most frustrating things, especially when you don't have a ton of time. And it's it's not the game's fault. Like, let's to be totally clear. Like, it's not the game's fault that this shit can be a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a pain in the ass. Like, that's just part of, like, I have a schedule now. I have to go to work. I have to go to school. I have to do all this other stuff. I can't come home and play video games until I get called down for dinner and then go up and play video games some more.
Yeah, and that's probably a me thing, you know, like, I've been very clear, like, where I'm at in my life now, and yeah, I'm a busy college student, so I can't always spend as much time as I did, you know, in Mario 64, trying everything.
Everybody goes through that.
Yeah.
And I did, and, I mean, I went through that on Radio Free Nintendo. You can hear it. You can go listen to the evolution of the games I'm talking about and see that happen. Because there was a stretch where I was just the JRPG guy. And the reason was I had finished college and my job didn't start yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have any money and I had a lot of time. And so I wanted my time to be if I was going to do something, I wanted it to take up a lot of time.
So... And I'm sorry if you want to continue your Tales of Symphonia.
That's it. No, that was it. Like, it's like there's okay. Like, I really enjoyed that game, but there is some absolute trash that does not respect your time in it. And so
yeah,
there's a secret dungeon that is just a real pain in the ass. And like it just is. Like, it's just that's what this game is. I got used to it at some point, but now I would never do that crap. Like, I would never play that game that way anymore. It's just not. It's not something I would want to do.
Right. So is it fair to say I've missed out? You know, I didn't spend the time that I think a lot of people did playing these games.
No.
So I can't just walk through them or.
No, I think what you're getting out of this is still valuable. Like, are you having fun playing these games as a whole?
Yeah.
Then you're fine.
Okay.
Like, maybe you're not going to walk away and think, like, this is the greatest game of all time. But that's okay. Like,
I'm almost inclined to say, like, it's hard for me to say Ocarina of Time is a masterpiece, which you see on every gaming site, any of their Hall of Fame or top tens, you know, just any of that stuff. For me, I guess it's like, I guess I agree, but I just because I respect it, and I know so many people like that game, and I have played it and enjoyed it, but I almost want to say, like, it's a masterpiece of its time, you know? Like, I don't know if you can put caveats.
Everything is a masterpiece of its time. Like, anything created artistically or technologically or scientifically is always a product of the era in which it was created.
Yeah.
And that's never going to change. Like, that's just part and parcel with producing things, with building things, with creating stuff, because you'll always get better. Like, you'll always have the opportunity to improve on ideas that have been laid down by someone before you. That's how we as a society get better. That's how we make better movies. That's how we make better games. That's how we make better cars. So, I mean, it's better houses, better everything. Like,
yeah, you're right.
And
you're
so right. To respect something as a masterpiece, you always have to be at least semi-cognizant of when it was made. There's art, there's paintings that are masterpieces, technical masterpieces now from, you know, the Renaissance that are still masterpieces and still stunning because of what they're capable of. But
I mean, people consider, like, Duchamp's fountain, which is just a urinal flipped upside down.
Yeah.
A masterpiece.
Well, I mean, art majors sometimes can need to justify their degree.
which is all right. I'll tell you later.
I've got one for this.
Oh gosh.
Bathtub full of googly eyes got an A+. That's all I'm gonna say.
What is it? The guy that does Renny-Mades now, he like took a fish aquarium and filled it with water and put three basketballs in it, and it like sold for millions of dollars.
Yes, and just screamed, "This is art!" And then walked out of the room. Yeah, that's yes. Yeah. But Even those artworks that are, you know, still stunning today, you know, your Renaissance paintings, like, they're stunning in a way that someone might be able to reproduce those with even more fidelity, even better representation, with better color because of the art material available to them. But if you go back 1,000 years from those, so your late classical era art, what they're emulating, they're doing a better job than what those can do because they have spent time refining on ideas and concepts that were developed, even though there was that weird period where they stopped doing them. And, you know, Zelda Ocarina of Time is a masterpiece because they took a game that seemed impossible to move out of 2D and just did it. Like, they just did it, and they didn't screw it up the first time. They didn't go and make their first one, and it was a dumpster fire. Keep in mind, at this point, you go through, like, the big games of the 80s and 90s, the franchises, and a lot of them had their first 2D entry or were coming up on their first 2D entry and had just flamed out, just absolutely failed. We still didn't have a 3D Sonic game.
Right.
Like,
it was the holy days.
Yeah, like, they had tried. They made Sonic R, but they didn't make a 3D Sonic game. And I think now we understand the reason they didn't was they didn't know what to do. Like, a bunch of Sega franchises that had been big in the Genesis and on the Master System had not had 3D entries. Or if they had, they had been suboptimal.
Yeah, you have to think, like, when they are turning these 2D games into 3D, they had to figure out, like, what to do that still made sense for the IP.
Right.
Like, for Mario, you know, it's such a different experience than just getting to the flagpole. Whereas they instead they built environments that were 3D for him to jump on.
Right.
Which effectively is the same as the 2D. Like, if you want to look at it that way, 2D levels are the same as the 3D. They're just flattened, you know, they're not really worlds you explore, I suppose, but at the same time, you are exploring them.
They are very, very... Mario 64 is dramatically structurally different than the Mario franchise up to that point. The very objective and ethics of that game... Ethics is such a weird word to use here. Of that, of that game is markedly different. Because in the Mario 2D Mario games, you're just going A to B. In Mario 64, that's almost never the objective. It's almost always do something.
You gotta wonder, like, at what point, though, did they decide to stick with that idea? Because the Bowser levels in that game almost seem like they were the original idea of turning a Mario into a 3D game.
Right. And the answer is prototyping. They probably prototype stuff and like, nah. And maybe the Bowser thing was one of the first things they had. Like, okay, well, what would the Bowser fight from Super Mario Brothers look like in 3D? Mm-hmm. Well, we wouldn't have him run across a bridge. That wouldn't make sense. All right, well, he's still in a cave castle, whatever you want to call the thing that, that Bowser lives in. So, okay, well, if we can't just have him cut an axe, or if it's not a bridge, you can't have him cut an axe because there's nothing to cut. He's on a platform. All right, so what can we have you do? Well, you could throw him. Okay, what's that look like? Okay, well, what are they going to throw him at? Well, it should be visually obvious with the limited 64 sprite palette they had. So a ball of spikes, done. Like, if you walk through it, you can see, okay, that's how they got there. They've got an idea. Let's try to make the Bowser fights into 3D. But in the end, it's a different thing. Zelda had the same problem. They've taken this, they have these core concepts that they have refined in really just three games at that point, three or four games, depending on what you want to think about too. And now they have to dramatically reorient them. And seeing a game make that jump seemingly effortlessly would have been shocking. Because I'm sure when they announced Zelda's going to be 3D, and I wasn't really following the scene at this point, people were probably worried. People were probably extremely worried. And I know this because I was following the scene when I did it for Metroid. People were petrified. You can't make a 3D Metroid. That's not how it works. You can't do it in first person. Fuck off. You can't do that.
Right.
And so while as an absolute right now for those games, you may play them and go like, why is it like this? Why is it like that? Why is this thing built this way? And you may be totally right. Building it that way doesn't make sense. Or building it that way now, you would go like, man, this is dumb. I hate this. Coming into that in the moment, it would have been shocking. It would have been like, oh my God, this is my Zelda, but it's in 3D and I have so much more ability to just explore now. This is so much more of a place than the 2D games were. That you would have like walked away thinking, this is amazing. I can't believe this game exists. I can't believe what I'm playing right now. And I think Breath of the Wild, you can see that to a large degree in the reception it got. It wasn't just that they put Zelda in a big open world that you can just explore freely, which they did. And that definitely got the game a lot of credit. It was that the world was so interactive at a mechanical level that I think people were kind of taken aback by it. And that has boosted the reception that game got in ways that would be very difficult to define. And so I think that's part of the reason why that game is so, you know, it just swept all kinds of awards and all kinds of stuff, is because people look at it and go like, the thing they did here, I've not done before in this kind of game, in this kind of way, or in this kind of franchise. And it's subverted their expectations in a way that gave the game extra impact as a product. And there's a lot to be said about that. Like, there's a lot of value in having your expectations subverted, because it causes the impact of the experience to be that much more intense.
Sure. Yeah, I think you're right. And like the past 5 or so minutes, I've really just kind of been putting into perspective all my thoughts on this and hearing what you've said. I don't want to say like changed my mind, but
I don't think it should.
Clarified, you know. It's giving me a reason to say why I feel this way about these things, and it does come up to like products of their time. People play these at a certain time,
right?
And it makes sense, like just the life math of this, you know, how things fell into place. It makes sense that yes, these are the reasons why people hold these up so well, and in a way, yeah, I don't really fall into that boat because I wasn't around for that, and maybe that's just an age thing, but like I think I respect it more for that.
Yeah.
And it makes me more inclined to like appreciate the archaic overhaul that Breath of the Wild brings to the table.
Because they themselves have said what you said, like some of this stuff, why are we doing it?
Yeah, like you don't have to worry about the pots with the arrows and the hearts and the rupees in the Breath of the Wild dungeons. You kind of control that on your own, and you come into the dungeon with those in mind. I don't know. I'm more interested now into seeing like what they're going to do with that, because I think Eiji Aonuma said that this is the new formula for the Zelda games.
Yeah, I mean, he said that because they spent a lot of money making that video game engine, and god damn it, they're going to get some usage out of it.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I'm already ready for the next one.
Yeah.
And I think, were you the one that mentioned that, like, you could see the Xenoblade blood in it? Like, you could kind of see that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And okay. We've been talking about Xenoblade a lot on Radio Free Nintendo. We spend a lot.
Xeno Week,
which like RFN didn't do anything for. We just kind of republished an episode of Xenoblade X. But we were on the Thirsty Mage for Xenoblade 2. Two of us were. Sure. Those of us that fell in love with Xenoblade X, which is John and myself, like we played that game a lot. And it's because of like the evolution of what was on the original Xenoblade and the exploration mechanics and all that stuff and all the movement and all the, here's this big giant world that you're going to move through. And Breath of the Wild has that. And Nintendo has always been relatively oblique when they discussed the role that Xenoblade had, but there is a interview somewhere where somebody says like, yeah, we had a team that had worked on a big open world game that we were able to leverage experience from. It's like, you could just say Xenoblade. You could just say it. You could say it, but you're not gonna, because Xenoblade X is its own thing, and you don't want to say like, Xenoblade X is, this is Zelda Xenoblade. No, Zelda is Zelda, and they were quite happy to bask in the praise they were getting and saying like, well, no, we were experimenting with some of these ideas somewhere else. You know, that they may have felt like that would diminish the accomplishment. But like there's mechanical stuff. Like you can see Shulk's jump sometimes. Like, oh hey, yeah. I've seen that jump animation before. Or not the animation, but like I felt this jump before. There's some stuff here that I know.
Right.
But they now have all this stuff in Zelda. They have ideas they've put together. They're not gonna just pitch it because like they spent a lot of money on tech to make that game happen.
Mm-hmm. I also want to respect like people that liked a lot of the things that I didn't like. And like the things I've complained about are like a lot smaller things that I think Breath of the Wild has fixed. So, and I think that a lot of people didn't like those either. They just weren't talked about as much, which is why I brought them up.
Right.
But like you mentioned, like the discrepancy you and I have on the dungeons, I still want to respect I think the majority of people that liked those earlier kinds of dungeons. And so I don't want them to just go with the Breath of the Wild formula now of the of how they're going to do dungeons from here on. I do want to still see the traditional kinds, because I did like them. You know, I thought the themes were really neat, and when I did solve something, I felt really proud of myself.
Yeah.
And that was like kind of the best part of the dungeons, is when you actually solve what they're telling you to do and you find all those visual cues. It's just the parts where I got stuck and had to go to a walkthrough because I just was not picking up what they're putting down. Those, then not only did they kill the immersion for me, but they made me feel like, wow, I'm not good at this, you know, like, I don't know, that maybe I'm just really sensitive about my Zelda gameplay, but, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it will be.
I want to be respectful to other people.
I don't think you're saying anything that's not. I mean, like, believe me, I've there's hundreds of hours of me going off half cocked, giving an opinion about somebody's favorite game.
right.
And you know, I don't think anything you said here is disrespectful. Like I think we will see the backflow of more traditionalist dungeons in future Zelda games, because I think
I think
even Nintendo would say, like, yeah, some of those dungeons were a little weak. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of they replayed the idea of you have all the items, so therefore we just replay the con and you don't know what order they're going to be in. This was kind of the fear I had coming out of Link Between Worlds, like, well, how are they going to make good dungeons? And to me the answer was, oh, they just didn't. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just said, like, well, they'll kind of all be the same. Some might be a little more difficult than others, but we're not really going to try to build custom puzzle sets and stuff in these. It's just going to be kind of the rotate gears until you get the right combo of stuff.
Right.
And
I agree with that. In the DLC dungeon that we talked about earlier,
yeah,
for Breath of the Wild, the one room that has, like, it's hard to describe, but, like, the ground is, like, a pool of water, and then there's, like, this weird contraption in the middle that's going all the way down parallel with the floor, and there's, like, a button at the bottom. My instinct was to use the ice pillar to, like, push the button up, but, like, you know, to use that ice pillar, you have to, like, line it up so the cursor is, like, blinking correctly so that way you know how to use it. And I could not get it for, like, the life of me to get that to work. And that was the solution. It turns out I was right from the get-go. I just could not get the ice pillar to, like, line up correctly. And so I eventually just gave up and was like, I guess there's something else I'm supposed to do. And I spent, like, an hour, which is a long time for a Breath of the Wild dungeon, just trying to find another solution. And that was the only solution to that. And in a game that's renowned for having multiple solutions. So
yeah,
it's not to say, like, everything I liked about it is perfect, because there are totally things I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Here.
And they did something different, so they're going to have to do new stuff.
Right.
Like, that's just part of the thing. It's going to take time, and they're going to have to evolve and create new ideas and you know, move along and as they develop new concepts. They'll get there, and they'll refine what they do, because that's what Nintendo does. That's what game developers do, and that's when I said, like, masterpieces are a moment in time. Mm-hmm. They're going to take Breath of the Wild, and I guarantee you other developers right now have that game in their studio, and they're taking ideas from it. They're going to take that game. They're going to say, okay, well, this is our budget for the next game. This is what we want to have it out. What can we do to put a spin on this game? Where can we make improvements in order to hit our release target?
Right.
They're already making the next game in that engine. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right now, that game is in – someone in Kyoto right now, because it's like 9 p.m. or 9 a.m. there, is building that game. Mm-hmm. And what that game ends up being, I don't know.
It's going to be Tingle's Dating Simulator.
Fucking A. But we're going to get there. And, you know – that happened with the DS games. I thought the DS games were great in the moment. They're controversial.
Sure.
But it was a neat change to subvert what those games were. And then the second one evolved on the perceived weaknesses of the first.
Right.
It had its own unique weaknesses because, again, they said, this is when we want to have the game out. This is what we want to make. Let's make this game.
Do you want them to push the story anymore? Or I've kind of, like, again, having played them all within, like, a short time period, I got a heavy dose of Zelda lore that I was not fully expecting. And so, like, trying to, like, kind of line things up, I get it. You know, I know the memes and the BS that the timeline is. So, like, I kind of come from the time frame or the perspective of they're all just stories that are used to fill what this kind of game is. But do you want them to ever...
I don't push that. I don't need that much plot, to be honest. Like, I make fun of the timeline pretty much constantly. Because like that, I mean, that timeline was so that like, we had to sell books. What can we sell books? What if we put an official timeline and I'll sell books?
It's almost like impressive that they were able to do it in like a way that for them makes sense, you know?
Yeah. And I think the way they were able to do it is they just didn't care that hard.
Right. Right.
They're like, worst case scenario, this comes off stupid. Okay.
But isn't it weird though that like that seems like one of those things they just would never address?
No,
but they just finally did.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's weird because they, it's more of a statement of the fact they wanted to sell books. I think, honestly.
Okay.
I think that's what it is, and I think they made Skyward Sword, and they said, "Well, like, we're gonna shoot this shit way into the past."
Yeah.
Because like they have contextualized some games around other games in the past. They've said like, "Well, this game, it took place after Majora's Mask, especially this game immediately after Wind Waker makes right. an explicit reference to Ocarina of Time," and so they just said like, well, we're gonna put this one in the past, way in the past.
I wonder if Twilight Princess is the one that kind of messed it up, because originally that game was supposed to be the sequel to Wind Waker, but you know what, the NOA kind of telling Nintendo in Japan that they were it was not selling as well here, they had to kind of change the art style, and so that's why they put Ganon in, and I wonder if that's where it all.
I don't
know. That's where the timeline.
That's probably putting more thought into the timeline than Nintendo's own developers did. They probably just don't care that much, to be honest. It's just like, sure. Yeah, whatever. We'll go and we'll make our game, and that'll be it. I do wonder, like. I mean, honestly, we probably need to start wrapping up. But I would love to know, like, which you played all these Zelda games.
Yep.
Which one do you most enjoy?
Well,
and that can mean anything. Like, enjoy can be defined any way you want it to.
Sure. I'm inclined to say before Breath of the Wild came out, it was a throw up between A Link Between Worlds and Minish Cap.
Okay.
Just because I found them to be accessible, and I think that they fit that time frame of, I don't have a whole lot of time, but I can still play a Zelda game. And so I liked those a whole lot. But now that I have Breath of the Wild, I think it fills that niche, and it's a 3D game and it's on the Switch. So it kind of like is a culmination of the reason why I liked things in the previous Zelda games. You know, I don't have as much time, but that doesn't mean I have to devote a whole, like, several hours to something, because with Breath of the Wild, you can really do what you want to do, and it's a portable thing, so I think that's why I'm inclined to say that one, and I hope my reasoning makes sense for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. Cool. I don't, you know, and I've played these games over such a long breadth of time, when we talk about, like, mm-hmm. this stuff's all about context. I would struggle to give context answer on that, because it's been so long since I played some of these, and where I yeah. was in my life in context is tricky.
Sure.
And so, you know, I like all of the games that have come out. I have ones I dislike in some ways. I have ones that I have moments that I adore that in a game mm-hmm. that I don't particularly care that much for. Like Twilight Princess, I think, has one of the most jarring moments of any Zelda game ever, which is when you walk through the Temple of Time.
Yep.
And it's just like, oh, shit. Bearing in mind mm-hmm. that the game that is referencing, I had played 12 years earlier. And so, like, sure. this immediate lightning callback.
Right.
It's very similar. There's a very similar event in Wind Waker,
yep.
Which I had, at that point, was like 6 years earlier. And again, like, it blew my shoes off. Like, it was, whoa, here and we are.
Breath of the Wild has a lot of those in smaller ways,
yeah.
because they're not as active to the plot. But like, oh, that's here.
Yeah. Okay. And, but in a way it didn't work for me as much, because that one just felt like, oh yeah, here's a thing. We're going to put a thing in here. Yeah. So it's a reference. Like, they referenced Demise, who's a character that
yeah.
no one should know existed. Because he's been dead for like a billion years. It's like, you're just,
yeah.
Yeah.
a lot of things were just named for the sake of being named.
Right.
Like Makar Island, but with a different spelling. It's like, all right, come on.
Yeah, it's like, so, but these were like big, impactful, this is the moment things. But both of those games are games that, like, I like Wind Waker more than Twilight Princess. It's not even close. I don't want to say Breath of the Wild, just because it's new and it's in the moment. But it's a really good game. It's really impressive.
I think ranking these for me would be really hard, and I'm not going to really attempt that. But maybe, come back to me after the next one comes out, just because I want to see what they do next with it. And then, now that you'll have. In a way, it's nice for me to have had played all these so closely together, so I can kind of comment on it. But when the next one comes out, I think I'll have a better frame of reference of, okay, maybe I don't like Breath of the Wild as much as compared to this, because there's more traditional things. But it's an interesting scenario.
Yeah, as time advances, there will be things about Breath of the Wild that you will come back later and go like, man, why'd they do it like that? But that's okay.
Yeah, and you know how much I like Sunshine so much, and so, like, I know how many people just can't stand that game because of, and I get it, there's a lot of reasons, and so I'm very open to that, but again, like, I come from the era of people that kind of grew up with it and puts up with the BS and is okay with it, so I understand that mindset. It's like, it's not like that is a stranger to me at all, and I think that's why I'm understanding more now of some of these Zelda titles. But I think just saying it out loud and talking to someone else and maybe feeling validated helps. But anyway, I think that is a great way to wrap up this conversation. I think that I've made my point, and I've tried practicing brevity here, and I have appreciated you, your insightfulness. And I hope that our listeners found this intriguing and are not triggered and enraged and ready to
I'll be fine.
Okay, cool.
People have said much worse about Zelda, and it's been okay.
Yeah.
Does Connectivity have an email address that people can send you their anger at?
I think we do have a listener's mail section segment. I think it's, I want to say it's connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
I should probably know this.
I should say I should know this, but I don't.
It is, in fact, connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
I got it right, guys.
But
cool.
So, yeah, if you don't like what we said about Zelda, if you hate, if even the slightest part of you twitches, send all of your anger, all of it. Like, even if it's not even about this, just send everything negative you have to say to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We're not on that alias, so go nuts. Go crazy. I'm going to get an email. I'm going to get a personal email. John Raritan is going to send me a message going like, what was that about? Don't do that. But it's okay. Come at me, John.
Well, on that, I want to thank you, James, for being a part of this.
Absolutely. Glad to have been a part.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you have your questions, send them to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Where we won't see them.
And,
or you can use the talkback over at NintendoReport.com.
Yeah, there is a talkback thread.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Pulling it back.
Leave your nasty hate mail there. Don't do that. That could be problematic, and I could get in trouble.
I'm a mod. It's fine. It's probably just going to be Chinese people trying to tell Chinese ads telling us how to make money from home. It's fine.
Well, thank you, everybody, and have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.